Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. I'm Blake Harrison.
I'm Stu Whiffin. How you doing?
Good, mate. Good. How have you been?
All right. Coming off the back of a four-day bank holiday weekend, which was nice. We had sunshine on Sunday. I had my shorts on in the garden, and Sunday took my dog for a walk in the snow.
Oh, lovely! Yeah, the weather's been like, what has the weather been doing? We had like nice sunshine one day, snow the next. It's been fucking mental. Well, look, I'm really happy about starting the show today because I've got something exciting to show you. So we've got some fans of the show down at Angel Share Glass in Scotland. I say down at, I should say up at Angel Share Glass in Scotland. And they have sent us a cheeky little gift, which is a little spirit glass here. And it's got, I don't know if you can see it there, Stu, the MMA Fan Podcast. That's so good, isn't it? So there you go.
Who was that? Again,
well, it's
that?
Angel Share Glass. They're a glassmaking company up in Scotland, and they're fans of the podcast, and they've sent us that little cheeky number, which is the Angel Share Glass Spirit Glass. You know, whether you choose Scotch whiskey, bourbon, rum, port, cognac, or even gin, this glass encourages you to sit back, relax, and savour your drink without having to take it too seriously, which I think is the perfect fit for us, Stu, because, you know, we want people to savour our show, but not take it too seriously because we're both idiots.
Exactly.
So that's the perfect fit for us. So to everyone at Angel Share Glass up in Scotland, thank you so much for that.
Thanks
so
much.
Kind. Beautiful little spirit glass inscribed with the MMA Fan Podcast on it. And there's one here for you, Stu, coming your way.
Amazing.
So, I made sure I asked for two. You know, we got one each. So they just sent us those. That's so nice of them. So thank you.
Oh, man, how good
Angel
is that?
Share Glass up in Scotland for all of your glass-making needs. And they've got some fun stuff on the website. So check them out if you're into drinking your spirits and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's a nice way to start the show, isn't it? We got our first little gift.
That will
that's
go
amazing.
Quite a place in the Whiffin, where I am right now, in the garden shed bar.
Perfect. Absolutely brilliant. So, okay, now that brilliant piece of news is out of the way, let's get on to, I think, one of the weirdest injuries possibly in MMA history. So, I mean, we quickly mentioned this before we started recording the show, and it looks like we've got two different ideas of what happened. So I'm going to start with for anyone that doesn't know, Cage Fury Fighting Championships, they're a smaller promotion in America, usually around the kind of northeast of the United States, and they've got a Russian fighter called Khatak Pliyev. I've probably pronounced that absolutely terribly, but I think it's Khatak Pliyev. And he was fighting at Cage Fury Fighting Championships, or CFFC 94, and his ring finger detached. What's your idea of what happened? Because I've listened to his coach and Khatak talking on MMAfighting.com about what happened. I love the whole Chinese whispers of MMA and how you're like, oh, this happened. So what is your understanding of what happened?
Okay, right. So I saw the picture. You sent me the picture, but I'd already seen it and had a little look. And then it led me to like a Twitter clip where it sort of showed where they thought it happened, where it was, from what I saw, a kick that literally must have caught his finger, and whether it sort of bent it back so far. And then the next thing, there was footage in his corner, and obviously I still couldn't see if the finger come right off or if it was just snapped all the way back and was just like hanging. I mean, it's pretty fucking horrid, isn't it? there's no silver lining here. Every single thing, whatever the, you know, you kind of take on it is, there's a finger missing.
Yeah.
So what's yours?
So, all right, well, according to Kotuk and his coach, so what I've got here, so after being taken down, his opponent reaches under and grabs his glove illegally and starts pulling on his glove, causing Kotuk's finger to lodge in his own glove. So his finger's kind of caught and bent over in his own glove. Now, once his fingers lodge, they get back to their feet, start striking.
Oh.
And apparently, Kotuk has a very hard punch, according to his coach. I mean, he would say that, but I don't disbelieve him because of what happens. With the finger lodged in, a punch connects, and with because the finger's already bent in there, the punch was so hard that the impact of the punch caused his finger to sever off. I don't know how that's possible, but that's what they're saying. There's a lot of people out there saying that he's lost his finger, his finger's come off. His finger was actually, I think, still attached, but hanging on by, like, thread, like skin. Oh. So his finger's just kind of flopping around in his glove. But what makes it even weirder is obviously the ref has to come in and the ref stops the fight because of the missing finger. Apparently, Kotuk wanted to carry on. He wanted to go out for the third round and just fight.
He looked fine. It was so weird.
It is so weird. But yeah, the moment that was the weirdest and potentially funniest is that a big like PA announcement in the arena in Philadelphia went out asking people in the building to be on the lookout for Pliev's finger. Because they were trying to
check under your seats.
Check under your seats. You've won the raffle. There's Pliev's finger. Oh,
someone's got one floating about in their pint.
That's it. So I think it was lodged in the glove. But because people couldn't find it, an announcement went out saying, can everyone in attendance please look out for Kotuk Pliev's finger? Wow. So that is mental. Thankfully, in the end, Pliev's finger gets sewn back onto his hand. He's on the road to recovery, and he wants to keep fighting and pursue his dream of fighting in the UFC. So, I mean, good luck to him. I hope he gets there, because that is a sacrifice, isn't it? I mean, you'll never get his coach saying to him, pull your finger out or anything, will you?
Was that whole story a lead up to that joke?
No, I literally just thought of that joke as I was speaking, and I was really proud of myself. And the fact you didn't laugh has really upset me. Oh, man. I was really proud. I literally, as I was speaking, I was like, oh, that's a good one.
Well, I think...
Oh, mate.
When we do get on to today's guest, we should definitely discuss MMA injuries and what's the worst he's experienced. But I mean, looking back over some of the, I guess when you look at Joanna's head swell, that was one of the most shocking things I've seen in the octagon. Obviously, the Weidman Anderson Silva leg break,
that was horrendous. That was really bad.
And then
you've got strange ones like... we mentioned it with Scroobius Pip on that episode about Kat Zingano suffering a toenail to the eye from Megan Anderson. That's got to be a pretty random one. I mean, there was no UFC this weekend, but there was a Bellator night. I don't know if you got to watch any of it. I was able to watch it on BBC iPlayer. They're now... doing the full card. I thought it would just be highlights, but it was like a frigging 4 or 5 hour long card, just all on the iPlayer. And I watched it. I mean, I'm early days with Bellator. I can't say that I've been someone that's been as addicted to Bellator or watching as much Bellator as the UFC. It's been much harder to get hold of and watch. But the production value's less. It doesn't feel... I don't know. I
know what you're saying.
It does feel like it's lacking something to what I'm usually watching. However, when it got to some of the top fights, it was great. I mean, Pitbull looked amazing, and there's an argument to be said that he's the best featherweight in the world. What would happen if he ever fought Volkanovski, Ortega, Holloway? You know, there's arguments out there that he is the best featherweight in the world. But we can get on to all the Bellator stuff, but the reason I brought it up was Jason Jackson in his fight against Neiman Gracie basically rubbed his eye all along the fence. And he said he felt like his eyelid pull up and stuff. And he carried on the fight and ended up winning the fight. But he suffered quite a bad eye injury during that fight, just from his face and his eye kind of raking down the fence.
Wow, that's not nice.
Not nice.
You see lots of, like, I mean, you see quite, I've seen a few over the years of like ear injuries, either like the pop in the cauliflower ears just burst, or sometimes literally just get torn. That don't be. Obviously, we mentioned it when we had Tomo on, Robbie Lawler's lip.
The lip.
You know, the fact that he didn't keep his mouth shut, was still screaming with joy when he won with another mouth, was absolutely batshit. But
was it Uriah Hall that had the bad toe injury? Who was it? His toe was facing the wrong way. It was like a really bad toe injury, and they kept the USC cameraman going to the toe. He kept going straight for the toe. I was like, mate, we've seen it once. We don't need to keep seeing the toe. Oh, that was a bad one as well.
I'll tell you what, that's the one that, like, when you hear it, you just think, oh, how bad is it? Come on, just show us. Let's have a look. And then when they show you, like, oh, I didn't need to see that.
Yeah.
I did not need to see that. Now you've gone back and we're looking at it again. It was like, yeah, that was brutal. In my dabblings in Muay Thai, I've had my big toe snapped.
I checked a kick
and it literally just snapped it, and my big toe was like almost hanging down. And I panicked and I sort of flicked the glove, like flung my glove off and tried to sort of push it back because I thought it was just sort of disconnected or something. Which it kind of put it back in a sort of area where it should be. And then I think the adrenaline of sparring kind of dropped. And then I was like, oh, that's really hurting now, and it's kind of still facing a bit the wrong way. And I remember sitting in Basildon Hospital in the A&E, and I must have looked like such a tit. I still had my vest on and me fancy shiny Muay Thai shorts, and I was sitting there, and you could see people walking in Basildon, which is a pretty unforgiving place. And they'd walk in and just think, fucking state of him in them shorts. Who's he think? And then they'd look down and they'd be like, fuck, ooh, that toe shouldn't be facing that way. So, I mean, it wasn't Uriah Hall level, because that was like almost sort of hanging off as well, wasn't it?
I just remember it being bad, and I think it was Uriah Hall. I remember just the cameraman just going to that toe all the time, and I was like, please stop with the toe, man.
Oh, brilliant. Well, should we introduce today's guest? Have we got anything else we need to say before we get on with today's chat?
I don't think so. No, let's go for it. We've got a brilliant young prospect.
Yeah.
Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, that's up there with the pull your finger out one. Good work.
Yeah, you can tell I don't write any of the comedy shows I do. we've got Nathaniel the Prospect Wood, former Cage Warriors bantamweight champion, current UFC bantamweight fighter. I'm just really excited about hearing what he's got to say. What's he got to say for himself? What's he got to say for himself, Nathaniel? Go on, mate. What you got to say for yourself? I don't know why I'm saying it like that. But yeah, no, I'm really excited to hear what he's got to say. I've had a little kind of Twitter relationship with Nathaniel for a bit, Twitter and Instagram, just a little back and forth, wishing him luck and stuff. So this has been the first time that I've actually properly chatted with him. So I am very excited to have him on.
Wonderful. Well, let's get going. Enjoy. Welcome to today's podcast guest, Nathaniel Wood. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Appreciate you guys having me on. And I look forward to speaking to you.
Absolute pleasure.
Pleasure's ours, mate. Pleasure's ours. I suppose we start off a lot of the podcasts with the same question, which I think really sets the tone for the chat, which is kind of what got you into fighting? Were you someone that responded well to confrontation as a kid, or did you get into scraps, anything like that? Or is it something else? Like what made you think, oh, fighting something I could do for a living,
So mine's actually a little bit unusual to most fighters. A lot of fighters were either bullied or, the opposite. They liked getting into scraps and they just had that kind of, desire to fight. With me, I just wanted to do a sport for a living. I was 16, just left school, and I was doing building work. I just kind of didn't know what else to do. So I went on the building site with my uncle, and I just thought, mate, sod doing this for the rest of my life. I didn't like it at all. I couldn't see myself working in an office. And my dad said, what do you want to do for a living? I said, I just want to be into sports, I want to be an athlete, everything about it appeals to me. And at the time, I was a UFC fan already. I was watching it, and I was watching the kind of, they were like the countdown series and stuff, where it was more about the fighters training and stuff like that. And I was watching the likes of Demetrius Johnson, Brad Pickett, who's now my coach. And they were saying that, they didn't start their training until they were in their 20s. So, I was sitting there thinking, hold on, I'm 16 now. If I do the maths, if I train hard, there's no reason why I can't make this into a living, Obviously, with boxing, football, a majority of other sports, it's going to be hard to make it, a living if you start at the age of 16. You've got to be pretty damn good to be making a career out of it. So I went along with my dad, who was already doing martial arts. He was doing jiu-jitsu at the time. And, mate, I was like a duck to water. I loved it. I loved the competition side of it. It's a one-on-one sport. And, yeah, so from the get-go, I just said to my dad, before we even went there, I went, I'm going to make this a living. I don't want to go on a building site. I don't want to go in an office. So I'm going to just make this work. And, he was with me every step of the way and just said, look, you better make sure you train hard then. So, yeah, here we are now.
And so that was jiu-jitsu. And did you go into that thinking, I want to get involved in like high-level jiu-jitsu, or was that I want to learn this as one of the disciplines to fulfill an ambition to be an MMA fighter?
Yeah, literally that. I thought, right, I need to be UFC champion. I've got to do some jiu-jitsu. So, I went along, obviously, with my dad. And at the class, there was a Muay Thai coach. I said, right, I need to do some stand-up. So I need to go and do Muay Thai. And then in my head, just, being a 16-year-old kid, I just thought to myself, all I've got to do is work harder than my opponents, and then I'm going to win. And it kind of just stuck with me like that. And at the time in my gym, there was Jimmy Manoa, who wasn't in the UFC at the time. He was but number one in the UK. And I think he was in his 30s. And I remember thinking, right, if I'm training with these guys now at the age of 16, it's inevitable. I'm going to reach that top position in the sport. And yeah, I just never doubted it. I just, before I even had a spar, I just said, yeah, this is what I'm going to do. And, I'm too stubborn to give up with it. So I just stuck with it. And yeah, that's what I say.
And that, it's fun. That stubbornness as well, like that brings with it a confidence, I imagine, as well. And just through feeling like, you took to it, like a duck to water, there's a big difference, obviously, from hitting the bag, hitting the pads and feeling like this is good. But then, did you take that confidence into your first spar and just think, hang on, someone's actually going to punch me back this time? And like, did that confidence sort of, was that there already? Or was there kind of, did you ever kind of get fearful of what you was about to do? Because walking into a boxing gym or a Muay Thai gym or whatever for the first time, it's quite, it can, I think from an outsider, can perceive it to be quite an intimidating environment. I think through going in them, as well, they're not. There's a lot of brotherhood and a lot of, people that will become your friends for life there. But yeah, just I'm going off sort of where I'm going with the question. But yeah, that confidence you said of just feeling like this is I'm a duck to water here. How did that confidence go when it got to, right, I've got to put the gloves on and put my gum shield in and start to spar now?
Well, I was always confident. I think, you know, with my dad being already there and part of the gym, you know, straight away he introduced me to all the highest level guys, you know, and it was kind of, I was the baby in the gym, you know, so it was everyone kind of taking me under their wing and, you know, I just trusted them. So I thought, right, if, you know, these guys are going to take me under their wing, show me how to do it, just trust them, you know, trust the process and, you know, listen to your coaches. And yeah, that's all I did. And, you know, obviously I got beaten up in sparring, but I loved it. You know, I've always, ever since I can remember, I've always loved play fighting. You know, I'm quite a boisterous kid. You know, I was always getting in trouble at school for play fighting. And I remember the teachers telling my mum when I was probably like 10 years old, they were like, oh, he must keep his hands and feet to himself. And because I just always wanted to wrestle. You know, I was watching the WWF or WWE and, you know, I just wanted to just play fight and wrestle. And if there was, you know, if I was at a kid's party and there's a bouncy castle, you know, I was doing somersault flips and trying to beat everyone up. But it was only ever just that competition. You know, I just love it. I'd always be running around and, you know, I guess doing what boys do. And to me now, this sport, this is play fighting. You know, we have a referee, we have rules, you know, where it's a 1v1 sport and that's it. You know, I'm literally, to me, I'm play fighting for a living. So, you know, it's a cool job to have.
Well, before we sort of pick back up on the journey, you talk about play fighting in the intro to this that Blake and I recalled. We spoke about an incident that happened in the last week that where I think the play fighting took a strange turn where a fella lost his finger. Have you seen this?
I saw, yeah. I haven't seen. How did he lose the finger?
Well, this is it.
But I think I heard him and his coach, Kitak Pliev, I think is his name, CFFC, and they were saying that they got into a grappling exchange. His opponent, according to them, illegally was kind of like tampering and pulling at his glove, which caused the guy's finger to lodge in the glove. And then when they stood back up to strike, he threw a punch and somehow with the finger lodged, it severed the finger. Yeah, so I think what Stu, if you don't mind me picking up, what Stu was probably going to say is, you call it play fighting, but there's not that much playful about it if people are losing fingers, getting knocked out, choked out, eye pokes, knees. Yeah. You know, we've had a plethora of incidents recently, haven't we, with illegal strikes or accidental eye pokes. Now we've had a finger come off. I mean, the amazing thing I was saying just
now was that it's not often the fingers.
No, yeah. Well, I think that's why it's made such news. Is, you know, it's such a random, unusual injury, and the fact that there's an announcement saying, "Can people please look out for Pliev's finger? It may be under your seat." You know, that kind of thing is unusual, even in MMA. Yeah. But you call it play fighting, but there's obviously some really serious risks involved. How do you go into it with a mentality of, oh, I just love to play fight for a living when you must be obviously aware of those risks?
So the way I best explain it is paintballing. You go paintballing, it's pretend battle, you know, if you like. It hurts, you know, getting shot with a paintball gun, flipping hurts. And people still do it, you know. So, of course, there's injuries in the sport and people can get hurt, but it's very slim, you know. It's not very often that there's real, you know, serious damage in the sport. I, touch wood, I've never, you know, had anything serious like that. And bumps and bruises, you know, that's all part of the sport and it's all part of the, you know, the fun and games, as I call it. And, you know, I think to myself that, you know, if you play rugby or you play football, there's injuries. You know, I know many footballers that have had a hell of a lot more injuries than I've had. And you wouldn't think that when I'm the one that's fighting in a cage and they're just playing a game of football. So, that's how I kind of look at it. You know, obviously you do get the freak accidents like losing a finger. And apparently he wanted to carry on or something.
He did. He tried to hide it.
Yeah, he's a little bit
nuts. The doctor or the ref came in. Yeah. You wouldn't go that far. No, the game's over when you lose a finger.
So, don't get me wrong. You know, I used to, you know, think a lot more serious of it. But now I just kind of go in there thinking the worst that can happen is I get knocked out. And, you know, that can happen. Like with anything, you're on a motocross bike. Well, there's risks involved. You know, every day I go out in the car, you're at risk of potentially, you know, having a car accident. And I just think of it now as, you know, with MMA, it's such a hit and miss sport. You know, it's so, it's so small on making an error. That's it. You can lose, and there's no point in even worrying about it. So for me, you know, I just go in there and I'm like, right, this is what I like to do. This is the fun in the games as such. You know, I know that there's the ref there, there's the medic team. You know, the worst that can happen to me is I get knocked out. If I do, I'll probably wake back up about 20 seconds later and, you know, everything will be fine. So, you know, as I say, it's you can't go in there and just worry about it. So, you know, I always find that there's more to life. There's more things going on in the world to worry about than, you know, me worrying about getting a couple of punches or digs in an MMA bout.
And what's going backwards? What's your dad's background then? Because am I right in thinking he's still your striking coach, is he?
Yeah, my dad's kind of, I'd say he's got like a head coach role. So he does a bit of everything with me. Unfortunately, he's 56 now and his body's battered. So, you know, he doesn't grapple with me anymore or do anything like that. But yeah, he's my kind of head coach. You know, I'd say he puts together the plans. You know, he holds pads for me, although, you know, he'd rather not now because his elbows are shot to pieces. But he's always in my corner. You know, he's the guy that can get into my head. He knows me best. You know, he's my dad. So he's been there with me since I was born. He knows when, you know, I might need a bit of a kick up the arse and let's go. Or he know when I need to calm down. You know, there's many days where he's saying to me, mate, you're doing too much. I need you to chill out a little bit, relax. And, you know, so what better person can I have in my corner than my dad, you know? So, yeah, you know, it's more of a trust thing with him. You know, I take him there with me all the time and, you know I can trust my life with him. So that's quite a special thing to have, especially when, you know, you're going in to have a fight with someone.
And how did the relationship with Brad come about?
So in the end with Brad, I was always a fan. I've seen him many times as a fan and just kind of giving him the wave and whatnot. But we met through a teammate. You know, I had a teammate who was also managed by Brad's manager at the time. So I went along with him just for some sparring one day. And, you know, I was lucky enough that Brad moved 5 minutes away from my house. So he said to me, look, Nath, you know, if you want to jump in the car with me and start coming to the gym, you know, you can jump in. You ain't got to pay for any petrol. So, you know, obviously being like a 19-year-old kid, I didn't have a pot to piss in because all my money was just spent on training. And yeah, you know, we got on like a house on fire. And, you know, it's nice to say now that, you know, the guy's like family to me. So, yeah, so it's a cool relationship to have with, you know, someone that I was a fan of before, you know, I even put the gloves on.
And your pre-fight ritual does get a little bit of attention because to anyone that doesn't know, you get Brad to slap you quite hard repeatedly in the face before you jump in the cage. Now, does Brad enjoy that a little too much?
He does. I've had to say to him, I'm like, listen, my mum said to me that you can only slap me twice now, not three, because she was getting worried that I was going to go into the fight already concussed, you know? And I've actually had fights where I've gone in with more damage from Brad than, you know, my opponent did me. So, but, you know, that ritual came from my dad. You know, my first ever semi-pro fight, he was the one doing it to kind of... I've always said to everyone, if you're going into a fight with nerves, jitters, and you're just overthinking, if someone slaps you in the face, you're not going to be thinking about anything anymore other than, I'm going to smash this guy up, you know? So I do sometimes have to hold back from giving Brad a slap, but, you know, I just have to get quickly in that cage and then, you know, let's get the fight started because, man, I don't like getting slapped. And Brad does it hard for sure.
And you see you two on like Instagram and stuff. You seem to have a really great relationship, you and Brad, and you've just touched on it there. And, you know, you're also fighting in his weight class you know, he was a big part of. If your life was a kung fu movie or a computer game, it'd be like, now you must like avenge the losses of your master. That's it. Send the apprentice in. Like, do you ever get any like, oh, this person beat Brad, so I really want to go and fight them now or anything like that?
Mate, it's funny you say that. As soon as I got signed by the UFC, I think I had my first fight and then straight after I called out every person that had beaten Brad and said, right, I want to avenge Brad losses. Which one of you wants it? And the only one to reply was Chito Vera. So that's where we've kind of had that little bit of beef and stuff.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, it's all fun and games. But literally, like you said, I want to avenge my master, you know. And if you're fighting someone that beat your coach, mate, what better way to, you know, get in the gym? Like, you don't need any more motivation than that. So...
Yeah.
But I don't know.
It's a great storyline as well. It, you know, it's like a kung fu movie or something. Yeah. You know, like if you ever do fight Chito Vera or Thomas Almeida or something like that, it is like there's extra spice to it. And, you know, when you're not headlining the cards or when you're not in like number one contender fights or something, those little bits of storyline are, I think, the things that make people go, oh, I'm going to make sure I'm tuning in for the prelims, or I'm going to make sure I'm tuning in right from the start of the card because there's this awesome storyline behind the fight that I always get very attached to and really enjoy.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what I say to everyone now, that, you know, of course you've got to fight, you've got to win and, you know, put on a performance. But sometimes people want a little bit more, you know. That's why a lot of people are doing the trash talking, which isn't for me. If we can get a little bit more of a storyline, like I'm fighting the guy that beat my coach, mate, people are going to tune in and... His opponents didn't really, you know, think obviously much of it. Chito Vera started, you know, just talking his mouth. And then, a lot of them didn't even reply. So I'll have to keep on, poking them until, they finally accept it.
I look forward to it.
And just in regards to that, obviously, we spoke about just before you get in the octagon, you know, like Brad giving you a slap. Just to go back a little bit before you get to there, what's your kind of routine backstage before you walk out? Because we spoke to a few fighters, and we asked Brad about this when he was on, and we spoke to Paddy Pimlet, who said, like, you know, he can't keep still. We said, but he's seen other fighters that are literally having a sleep, which seemed insane. But like, yeah. What's your routine?
So for me, I've got it down to a T now, to what I like, you know. I will not even look like I'm fighting until about 2 hours before. You know, I like to be as relaxed as possible. You know, the whole fight camp, all I'm worrying about is making weight. Once I've made weight that day, I'm thinking about what am I going to eat. And then on fight day, I just make sure I don't think about anything because I don't want to, you know, just over clog my mind with thoughts of what can happen, what if this happens, because it's MMA, anything can happen. And then about 2 hours before, I just have to get angry, man. You know, I people will see me and I'll look like a psycho before. You know, I'm just screaming my head off and just, you know, bouncing up and down. Just like Paddy Pimlet said, I cannot sit still. As long as I'm moving and constantly just, you know, just shouting to myself and in my head thinking, you know, this guy has just tried to attack my mum or something, I'm good to go, you know. If I sit down too long, that's when, you know, the kind of jitters creep in and I start thinking, oh, you know, what if I lose this and I don't get my win bonus? And, you know, I don't want to think about anything other than, you know, I'm going in there to fight and fight this guy. And, you know, that's obviously why I get Brad to do the slaps, because that's just kind of that extra little, you know, thing to piss me off and get me rowdy for the fight. So, you know, I always feel that 2 hours before, switch on, you know, get some music in my head and, you know, stuff that'll get me pumped up. And yeah, for two hours, I'm just bouncing around like, you know, I'm on untold amount of caffeine.
You touched on fight bonuses there, and you know, since you've been in the UFC, you've won a few of those. And I just wonder, with all of the things that must be going through your head the minute that buzzer sounds and the fight starts, is them win bonuses, are they ever in the back of your mind when you're fighting?
If I'm honest, when I'm fighting, no. But they are before the fight, you know, because obviously this is a harsh sport in the sense where, you know, a couple losses and you're done. And, you know, okay, you do have a few other promotions now like Bellator, ONE FC, but I want to be in the UFC. You know, that's the top place to be. That's the one that pays the money. So you do get those thoughts creeping in of, you know, oh, shit, what if I don't put on a good performance and they cut me and, you know, then I'm not earning any money and then I'm going to go back to the building sites. But I use that to fuel me, if that makes sense. You know, pressure makes diamonds. And, you know, the more pressure I put on myself, the more, you know, it kind of keeps me in the gym, keeps me, you know, doing what I'm supposed to do. So, yeah, you know, it does creep in the head. But, you know, once the fight starts, it, you know, anything just goes out the window and it's all kind of tunnel vision on that fight.
And how is it with the bonuses after the fight? Because obviously your last fight to Casey Kenny was a really close fight, and unfortunately the judges didn't see that in your favour. But you did win a fight of the night bonus. And, you know, for some fighters out there, 50K that you get for that fight of the night bonus is more than their win bonus. So does that in any way cushion the blow, or are you like, well, no, I'm still pissed off because I lost? Or does that fight of the night, does it A, cushion the blow of the loss, and does it B, you're talking about the slight kind of anxiety of going, oh, the UFC might cut you, but they're less likely to cut you if you lose, but put on fight of the night and stuff like that. So how do you feel about it after the fight?
Yeah, 100%. You know, that did soften the blow. What did soften the blow straight away was that Dana White was Cage side, and, you know, even after Casey, they got announced that he won, you know, he looked up and said, like, mate, amazing fight. And, you know, apparently he was a standing ovation. So that straight away was like, okay, that's a bit of a relief. You know, I haven't pissed the boss off. You know, you could win and put on such a boring fight. And, you know, if Dana White walked out of, you know, just disappointment of the fight, that would be gutting. So, you know, straight away that...
He's not shy with it either, is he? No. He will cut. I mean, like Uriah Hall, Anderson Silva, he came out and slagged off Uriah Hall, and Ngannou Lewis back in the day as well. That he's not shy in saying when he's unhappy with the fighters.
Exactly. So for the boss to kind of, you know, turn around straight away, say good fight, that was a nice feeling. What was a nice feeling was that I got a fight. You know, it was a 3-round war. You know, it was, and as I say, it's good fun. This is what I like to do. You know, I don't dread being in the cage because this is what I train to do. It's like a footballer playing football. You know, it's the wrong sport if I wouldn't want to do it. So even though getting, you know, a 40-second knockout's amazing, sometimes you get it and you're a bit like, you know, that was it. Yeah, I kind of went off the subject then. But yeah, you know, so obviously that softened the blow. And then the rest of the fights, me and my dad were just watching, thinking, if anyone's not as good as that fight, I've got the bonus. You know, the UFC basically said to Brad, yep, you know, Nate's going to get the bonus, providing no one else outdoes him. So for the rest of the night, I was just sitting there like, oh, come on, I need that money. You know, I really could do with that money. And, you know, once the Khabib and Justin came out and the fight started really well as well, I was sitting there thinking, no, like, you know, imagine if Khabib gets the extra bonus, you know, he doesn't need it. So, you know, when I saw that the fight got finished pretty quick, I was like, yes, you know, I'm definitely going to get that bonus, which I did. And yeah, it definitely helped, you know, it definitely put a smile on my face, especially that I took the fight on 3 weeks notice, you know, so...
Yeah,
take a fight on 3 weeks' notice, come out with obviously your paycheck and an extra 50 G's, it's a nice feeling. You know, it would have been a lot of a harder Christmas if I hadn't have done that.
Are the top UFC brass kind of, are they understanding of and take into consideration things like they've taken this fight on 3 weeks' notice? Like, do you ever hear anything from them either through coaches or yourself where they kind of go, but, well, it doesn't matter that this person lost, they took this fight on short notice. Like, you kind of, you hear this whole thing about being a company guy and doing things for the company, and you'll be repaid down the line if you do favours for the company. Like, so does that ever come into consideration, or do you hear anything back about taking fights on short notice?
So I don't hear anything back personally. But, you know, with me, it's mainly my manager and Brad that, you know, discuss everything with the UFC. So, you know, I'd like to think that the matchmakers, Dana, you know, they understand. He took down short notice. Yeah. You know, we're not really going to count that as a loss. It was a good fight. But I don't hear anything, you know, personally, myself. So that's why, obviously, at the fight, you know, when Dana looked at me and actually said, great fight, that was a nice feeling. Because plus, I'm a fan of Dana, you know. Like, obviously, you know, I've been a UFC fan since I was 11 or 12. And Dana was the man, you know. So... It's cool when, you know, he's there looking at me saying, mate, wicked fight. And, you know, it's a cool experience. And, it just sucks that I didn't get the win because, you know, I actually thought I did. And I had a lot of names I wanted to start calling out after I got that win. But, you know, shit happens, doesn't it?
One of the things that I'm always interested to ask fighters as well and a fan is when speaking to Brad, you know, again, you know, Blake and I saw Brad fight many times, and we asked this to Paddy and to Molly McCann. British fans love British fighters, and when there's a British fighter on a bill, the whole country's there, and just you know, just literally just cheering them on, wanting to see the British fighter do good. Do you ever feel a weight of expectation from fans when you fight?
Yes, I do, in the sense where, you know, I put the pressure on myself, but I think I've got to perform. You know, I've got to perform, but not so much just for the UK fans, just fans in general. You know, I've got to put on a fight. I've got to make people think they got their money's worth. And, you know, that's why I always like to be in high-paced fights, you know, that the fans are going to turn around and say, man, that was a good fight. You know, I'd rather lose and be in a fight like Casey Kenny, which got fight of the night, than win and just, you know, he grinded out a win, or, you know, he just took the guy down and laid on him for three rounds. And, you know, people don't remember that. So, you know, it helps obviously having a coach like Brad, who was known for being in some absolute wars. But yeah, you know, it's hard. You have got to get the win, but, you know, usually I'm just thinking I'll put on a performance more than anything. You know, that means the world to me, having someone message me saying what an amazing fight you had. And, you know, to get fight of the night, it's a cool feeling to think, you know, out of all them fights, I was the most entertaining fighter on the night, you know. So, yeah, but in fighting in the UK, especially when I was on Cage Warriors, having about 2,000 fans in a packed out little O2 Indigo Arena, that was cool. You know, that was like, man, I can't let these people down. And it was always that extra push in the fight because it felt like they were in there with me, you know. Yeah. And so, yeah, it is a good feeling, especially when, you know, you're fighting in the UK. And when I fought in UFC London, it was a sold out arena, and you know, that was special. It was it's hard to explain how it feels coming out to a crowd that cheering you on when there's what 18,000 people in that arena. It's cool.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And in regards to the performance sort of in the ring and things like that, and how you want to give people a show, and obviously how you were saying you want to impress the boss, and you want to keep moving forwards. And obviously when we spoke to Brad as well, he said he was never one for trash talking. And I know that you're not a big trash talker, you know, as well, from what we've seen of you. But you did also say that it was in your mind, if you got that win, you was going to call out some fighters and stuff. So is that, you know, we've seen it with the McGregor effect, whatever you want to call it. And we're seeing it now with O'Malley. Like, you know, these people are creating hype.
Yeah.
Like, you know, is that kind of social media side of things and you know, Nathaniel Wood as a brand, is that something that you give a lot of thought to as well? And how do you approach that?
It is, for sure. You know, I think that it's very important that athletes market themselves well. You know, you've got to focus on building your brand, which is yourself, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to stay with you forever. You know, this sport it can be very short. So, you know, if you can build your brand, you've always got that to fall back on. But however, I also do believe in being yourself. You know, I don't want to, I can't change my personality, you know. So a lot of people say Colby Covington, oh, no, you know, he's a really nice guy if you actually know him, but he's putting that on as a persona. I can't do that, you know. To me, that's, you're selling yourself. And, you know, I'm not into that. So I will trash talk 100% and I'll call people out if it's natural, but I won't force it. So, you know, when me and Cheeto have had a bit of back and forth, you know, I'm generally enjoying that, or I'm having a bit of banter or whatever. But, you know, when people are trying to copy like McGregor and stuff like that, I just find it so cringy. And, you know, I think people devalue themselves like that. You know, I want to be known for being myself, and hopefully people like that. And if they don't, you know, then that sucks. But yeah, you know, I don't want to sell myself just to earn a couple of extra quid. You know, if the UFC turned around and said to me, look, we want you to act like Colby Covington and we'll give you millions of pounds, never ever would I, you know, create that fake personality. And especially when you're going to get all that hate off people just to have more money in the bank, you know, that to me is not worth it.
So do you give a lot of thought into your call outs then? Because I know that you called out Sean O'Malley in the past. You've recently quite respectfully said to Dominic Cruz, you know, that you're available for a fight as well recently. Do you ever have to think like about how the call outs themselves will come across, or the opportunity post fight when you've got a call out? Because I mean, there's certain call outs where as fans you just go, oh, as if that's going to happen. I remember Michel Pereira calling out Masvidal a while back, and you're like, Masvidal at the time was like number two in the world off the back of like, I don't know if it was the Usman loss or the win over Nate Diaz, but it's like as if Michel Pereira, like ranked 25th or 30th, is going to fight Masvidal ranked number two. It's just not going to happen. So do you have to give that a lot of thought in terms of like how it's going to come across? Or is it just a case of like, no, whatever I'm feeling at the time, or like if I say a big name, there's no bad thing that come of it. I either get the fight or I don't. But mentioning big names is important, or is there more thought that goes into it?
So I do put a little bit of thought into it. You know, obviously I've always said that Cody Garbrandt's someone that I would love to fight, but I'm not going to sit there calling him out because he's not going to fight me, is he? I mean, I think he's ranked fifth. Yeah. He's not going to fight someone that's not even ranked in the top 15 yet. The Dominic Cruz one, that had a bit more thought behind it because to me, you know, you can say I'm being biased, I won that fight. I thought I won first Casey Kenney. So yeah. I felt like that should have been me in there with Dominic Cruz. When I watched him fight Casey Kenney, I actually thought Casey Kenney won. But maybe, again, that's me just kind of being biased, you know, watching the guy that I just fought. And I was watching that fight thinking, man, I would smash Dominic Cruz here. You know, I would kick his leg to pieces, knowing that he's, you know, not got very strong legs. And I believe that I would have got that win. So, you know, it's kind of one where it's a bit of a long shot. You know, I don't think he's going to turn around and say, yeah, let's fight, because, you know, in his head he's thinking, well, I just beat the guy you beat and all that malarkey. But if you don't ask, you don't get. So, you know, I thought I'd put it out there. And, you know, the most frustrating thing as well is when everyone says, oh, but you're ranked below him. Well, someone's got to fight someone that's ranked below him, because otherwise no one's going to fight, because everyone's going to be thinking I need to fight someone in front. Obviously, with Dominic Cruz, I also thought, you know, he's been there, done that, got the T-shirt. Is he in his head? Is he still thinking about pursuing the title, or is he just fighting to get paid? Because, you know, I can't see him, you know, getting that belt again. I can't see him beating the top five people. You know, for him, he could look at me and think, oh, that's an easy fight, nice little paycheck in there, and, you know, easy work done. So, yeah, it's kind of a don't ask, you don't get. So, you know, I put that one out there. With Sean O'Malley and Chito Vera, they're two guys that I don't actually think Sean's ranked. But if he was ranked at the...
He's not.
Yeah, so when he was, I think he was 15th. And I think Chito's now 15th. So I'm like, look, these guys, you know, I think Chito's coach said, oh, you're not ranked. And I'm like, well, you're just on the cusp, you know, you're 15th. So any day you could...
He's coming off a loss as well.
He's coming off a loss. You know, he's two losses, one win in his last three fights, same as me. And he constantly was giving me back and forth on Twitter. So I'm like, right, fight me. You know, if you're going to say it, let's do it. And Sean O'Malley was the same one. You know, I put something up and I think I put a little bit of banter. I think I said, imagine Sean O'Malley's leg, because I had the UFC record for most leg kicks in the fight. And then he said, let's scrap then. So I'm like, okay, cool. Like, that's it. That's done. You've just accepted the fight. Cool. let's, you know, get onto the UFC and make it happen. Next thing, he's fighting Thomas Almeida. So, you know, why didn't he just reply and say, oh, piss off? You know what I mean? Like, so to reply, let's scrap, and then not, you know, that's why I kind of, you know, been calling him out a little bit. But yeah, you know, I usually put a little call out. If someone doesn't respond to it, cool. If they do, great. You know, let's get a fight on. And it's not just always for the crowd, but it's a bit of excitement for me. You know, if I'm fighting Chito Vera after, you know, he spoke a lot of shit to me, that gets my juices flowing. You know, that gets me in the gym more than I'd normally be. You know, that gives me that little extra motivation. So, yeah, it's not always about excitement for the fans. It's also for me as well. You know, I like to have a little something going into the fight.
That's very kind of like Michael Jordan. Was it The Last Dance? Did you see that documentary?
I saw a couple of episodes. I didn't see it all.
Yeah, I loved it. But it seemed like Michael Jordan would just create things that, like, someone on the opposing team, he'd go back and say, he just said this about me, or he said this about a teammate or my mom or something like that. And the guy's like, I never said anything. But Michael Jordan's concocted this thing and made it a real big thing. This guy said this about me. So that it gave him that extra motivation to go out there and just play harder, train harder, all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. Sometimes you need that. You know, I'm always motivated, but sometimes you need that little extra something, you know, make it that little bit more exciting. Because, you know, if the UFC said to me now, oh, you're fighting, you know, some guy that no one's ever heard of, you know, you've never heard of him, he's a debut guy, you know, it's not that exciting, you know. I'll of course train, but to me that's like, you know, it's like going to work, get your paycheck, cool, you know, I'm happy with that. But when you've got someone that's, you know, oh, this guy was speaking a bit of crap to you, or when I was fighting Umar Nurmagomedov, it was like, right, this is Khabib's cousin, everyone's doubting you and saying how good he is, cool, you know, let's get in the gym, you know, that's got me buzzing. So, you know, things like that do always help. And the more reward, the more exciting. So, you know, if I'm fighting a tough guy who's, you know, so if they gave me now, I don't know, let's say they gave me TJ Dillashaw, I'll be like, shit, TJ Dillashaw's good. You know, that is a tough fight. But, mate, what about if I win that? You know, that's going to get your juices flowing. You know, imagine if I beat TJ Dillashaw, knock him out. And, you know, that's always that extra buzz is what I think, you know, can spur fighters on that little bit more during their fight camp.
And that whole thing that you see in Rocky films of, like, you know, the underdog and the hungry fighter, you know, you've got to have that hunger. And so, you know, what you were saying there, you know, getting a fight like Dillashaw, it's like, you know, this could be a huge moment to really shine and where this could take me. And so just in regards to that kind of hunger, if we look back at, like, the Cage Warriors and that desire to win that belt, to get that belt, mm-hmm. Was the hunger the same to defend it as it was to win it?
It was, because obviously I wanted to get to the UFC. So, you know, the first defense was like, right, I need to defend this title. I'm like, you know, at the finishing line here. I need to just get this guy done, and then the UFC are going to sign me. Then when I beat Josh Reed, the UFC, they didn't come with anything. But then when I just signed my next bout agreement for Cage Warriors, they did. They came in with a short fight offer, so I think it was on 5 weeks notice. But where I just signed my bout agreement for Cage Warriors, I turned it down. So, you know, I think in my contract I had to finish the Cage Warriors fight anyway, so, you know, I don't know if they would have let me go. Secondly, 5 weeks notice, you know, it was hard, and not for to get fit, it was hard to make weight. So I was thinking, you know, I don't want to make my UFC debut and miss weight, you know, that's never going to look good. So going into my final Cage Warriors defense, that was even more motivation, because now I know the UFC is sitting there with a contract. If I lose, they're going to rip it up. So, you know, what more pressure do you need to perform well than that? You know, I literally know that contract's sitting there waiting for me. And then obviously I go in, and I think Luke Ovin, it was like 40 seconds, I got the knockout. So that was a good feeling. So yeah, even winning the belt, you know, there was still a lot left in front of me. And even now, you know, I get to the UFC, cool, I'm a fish in a big pond now, you know. Whereas before on Cage Warriors, you know, I'm the champ, etc. But now it's the UFC. So until I get that UFC belt, you know, I'm still miles away from where I want to be. So yeah, I still look at it as now as, you know, I've got a lot of work to do.
You mentioned weight cutting there. Do you have a kind of set regime or procedure for weight cutting? I mean, we had Paddy Pimblett on a few weeks back, and he was talking about how he's much better now, but he was maybe not the most professional a few years back. And I think He said he got to a point where he cut 18 pounds in one night to make weight against Julian Arosa. And you're like, I say stuff like this to my wife, and she's like, she doesn't understand how it's humanly possible to cut anywhere near that kind of weight. So, I mean, if you don't mind me asking, how much is like your average cut from your kind of walking around weight to your fight weight, to that 135 pound mark? And what's your kind of procedure for doing it?
So I walk around at about, I've gone up to about 76 kilos before, but if I'm healthy and, you know, training, eating reasonably sensible, I walk around at about 73 kilos and I fight at 61 kilos. So that's 2 stone I have to lose. The first stone is, you know, is doable through, you know, just dieting. You know, I've got a little bit of fat to lose, but then when I get to about 145 pounds, there's nothing left on me. You know, there's no fat at all. So that's obviously when I then have to do the water cuts and, you know, dehydrate yourself. And that is all a kind of real, that's a science, you know, there's a lot to it. Luckily I've got a decent nutritionist, Yanis Fleming, you know, he's Mr. Sport on Instagram. So he looks after me, you know, in regards to the process and making sure that I do it healthy. But yeah, it sucks, mate. Cutting weight is horrible. You know, I could fight every week. As I say, it's what we train to do, but I couldn't cut weight every week. And because I have such a, in a way, anxiety about making weight all the time, you know, it means that I never miss weight, you know, because I'm literally, I'll weigh myself 10 times a day. I'll know exactly, you know, what I should be on the scales every single second of the day. And that's how, obviously, I always make sure that I make weight. For me, the process is mainly cutting calories. You know, a lot of people, I have chocolate sometimes 2 weeks out from a fight. I won't have a lot, but I'll have a little chocolate bar. And people say to me, oh, you know, that chocolate can, you know, do this to your metabolism and it stops your body losing weight. And it's bollocks. You know, you cut down the calories, you'll lose the weight. If you increase the calories, you'll put weight on. Whether you're eating an avocado or whether you're eating a Mars bar, it's the same if it's the same calories in regards to losing weight. But you know what I tell people is sometimes having that little bit of chocolate mentally, it's going to make you feel a hell of a lot better than having that bit of avocado that, let's be honest, no one's really going to be that bothered about it. So it's not the most healthy process. You know, I make weight to make weight. I don't make weight to be healthy. I don't make weight. You know, my fiance, she tries to copy what I do. You know, she's like, yeah, I'm going to do this and I'm going to get in a sauna and lose weight. And I'm like, well, why? Because you're not losing water. You don't want to lose water weight. You know, I'm doing this to purely get on the scales at 61 kilos. Yeah. Week later, I'm going to be 73 again. So yeah, you know, it is a horrible process. But it's something that unfortunately we have to do. And that's what, you know, I always look at is the paycheck. You know, when I get on them scales and I've made weight, that's my paycheck done, you know, and now then it's the fun bit. So yeah, hopefully one day, you know, the process might stop and there might be a way where we can, you know, all just fight at our natural weights and not worry about, you know, making ourselves look like crackheads.
Well, that's what ONE Championship do, isn't it? That they have, I don't know the exact process, but like I know that Demetrius Johnson is fighting at 135 pounds rather than 125 pounds.
Yeah.
And I think they do regular kind of hydration tests before the fight. So is that something that interests you then? Not necessarily going to ONE. I know you've mentioned that like UFC is where you want to be. But like if the UFC ever said, hey, we're adopting the ONE Championship method of weight, so everyone's going to go up 10 pounds and we're going to do these hydration tests to make sure that no one is, you know, depleting themselves too much. Is that something you think is a good thing?
Yeah, for sure. I guess what they would do is because they're going to make it so you can't cut water weight, everyone's just going to diet down to where they've got to be. So for me, I guess I'd be 145 pounds, but instead of losing water weight, I'm just dieting down. However, that still sucks because, you know, me walking around 145 pounds, I'm miserable. You know, I want to eat chocolate. I don't want to eat and go for Nando's. And obviously for me to, like, you know, at 72 kilos, I'm probably 10% body fat. So, you know, if I walk around 66, you know, I can't think of the top of my head, but that must mean I'm about 5% body fat. So you can imagine, you know, you're pretty miserable, especially when you then have to go and train as well. But yeah, if it can keep me out of that sauna, oh, count me in, because that's horrible. You know, time goes so slowly when you're in them saunas and, you know, and you're just gasping for water.
Well, I guess then let's go post-win. Once you've left the arena, where'd you go? A, what do you eat straight away? What's your go-to? And then, like, yeah, what's the kind of post-fight process?
So the post-fight process, for me, I never want alcohol. You know, everyone's always like, oh, you know, you want to go out on the piss. I'm like, if I'm honest, no. My adrenaline dump, you know, kicks in and I just want to eat, man. And literally whatever I can get my hands on. I think in Fight Island, I ordered everything there possibly was on the menu. And, you know, I think I treated my dad and Brad and Ashley, and it comes a few hundred quid for pizzas and brownies and milkshakes, and this is at like 3 in the morning. So yeah, if I'm honest, whatever I can get my hands on, and just, it's disgusting, really. You know, if anyone sees me, I look in the mirror when I'm doing it and I'm thinking, man, what's my life come to? You know, with fat greasy bag like dripping down my mouth. But it's a nice feeling, you know, and they sort of say your eyes bigger than your belly. So, you know, I've made myself sick a few times post fight. But it's always worth it.
Well, you mentioned Fight Island there, and tell us a little bit about Fight Island.
It's cool. It is a good experience. You know, nothing beats having a crowd in an arena, but, you know, fighting with no one in there is actually quite a cool experience in itself as well. You know, I can hear the commentators talking as I'm fighting. And
right, that's something I want to know. So yeah, it's really weird, because sometimes you'll hear Rogan or DC go like, whoa! And if someone's banged you and you can hear, yeah, all of these people, can you hear all of this?
Yeah, 100%.
No!
Yeah, so...
Well, you heard that thing where DC was basically saying, my mind's a cheat code, because I can't remember who it was, but DC was saying something about the wrestling, and the fighter heard it and then adapted and then thanked DC in this post-fight interview because he heard it. And DC was like, I can't help it, I'm a cheat code.
No, I didn't know that. But I know Kevin Holland was asking Khabib, wasn't he? And he was saying, you're going to be a wrestler like that. But it's one of those.
And then he did take down Derek Brunson,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those where, you know, I'd say there's about 40 people in the like arena, because, you know, there's the press, there's Dana, the matchmakers, refs, etc., whatever. But it's whoever you focus listening to. So, you know, trying to listen to my corner, that's all I can hear. But then your mind does kind of, it's, you know, like taking off notice a bit, and I'm listening to the commentators and I'm thinking, I'm winning, you prick. Do you know what I mean? Or whatever. And yeah, you know, sometimes obviously if the commentators are like, you know, saying, oh, Nate's looking great, I'm sitting there thinking, yeah, you know, of course I am. But yeah, you know, obviously I try to focus on my cornerman, and then, you know, that obviously kind of blacks out everything out. I'll tell you what, I could hear my opponent's cornerman, and that was pissing me off with Casey Kenny, because they were saying, there was a time when, you know, he didn't even hit me, and they were like, yeah, and I'm like, shut the fuck up, come on, you know what I mean? He didn't even hit me. And in my head, I'm thinking, no, the judges are going to think that he did hit me now, and, you know, or his cornerman say, like, you know, he's got nothing. And I'm thinking, right, we're going to see about that. So, you know, you have got to be careful with it, because, you know, if your opponent's cornerman, if they can get into your head, you know, that can mess you up a little bit. So, you know, I have to make sure I block that out, and, you know, just try and listen to my dad and Brad.
And in regards to Fight Island, and obviously the whole reason it come about is because of the pandemic and the situation that we're all in, how did fighting during a pandemic, how was that for you, you know, for training, for sparring, and how did it affect the usual routine?
If I'm honest, I got very lucky. I fought John Dodson just before the pandemic started. Then when we had the first lockdown where, you know, I couldn't even get in the gym, you know, I didn't really need to train because I just had a fight anyway. So, you know, you can have a little bit of downtime. And then we just, I think, eased up the first lockdown when I was fighting Umar Nurmagomedov. I think I had 8 or 9 weeks and we could go back into the gyms and, you know, everything was kind of back to normal. And then the Casey Kenny fight was obviously on short notice, but when I was fighting him, professional athletes were allowed to train. So I never, you know, had to fight or, you know, get in a fight camp with no gym. Luckily, you know, I always kind of got away with it. So that's why I always say, you know, win, lose or draw, I'm just fortunate that I got to, you know, be able to compete, because I know there's a lot of fighters out there that didn't. And, you know, if you don't fight, you don't get paid. So the fact that I got free, you know, during that pandemic was, you know, I was happy with that, even though, you know, two of them were losses, unfortunately.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
The pandemic also as well has obviously been very difficult for people's mental health.
Yeah.
And I think I've read in an interview that you yourself have had struggles with depression and anxiety and stuff. And I wanted to know kind of, when did you realise that you might need to seek help for that? And also for anyone that's listening that's going through similar difficulties, I think it's always great for people that have been in, particularly in jobs like your own, where it's very kind of masculine, alpha male and stuff, and particularly young men don't talk about any issues that they're having with mental health. So for you being someone that has openly talked about that, do you have any kind of advice for anyone listening that thinks that they either don't want to talk about it or they don't know what the point of that is?
Well, I'm lucky enough that I've got, you know, good family and good friends around me. So I've always had people to talk to. But my best advice would be, if you haven't got someone to talk to, go and seek help, you know, whoever that is, you know, whether it's the doctors or, you know, whether it's, I know there's so many numbers out there now that you can call, but just talk to someone. Do you know what I mean? I'm lucky that, you know, I've got my mum, my dad, my fiance, you know, I can talk to them and cry my eyes out in front of them. And, you know, I'm not embarrassed. I'm not worried about it. So, you know, for me, that's, you know, I'm lucky to have them, because if I didn't, I wouldn't know how I would have coped. So, you know, my best advice is, if you don't have friends or family that you can talk to, you know, ring one of these numbers and just find someone that you can, you know. And I always found that keeping myself busy always helps. You know, I think there's nothing worse than sometimes your own thoughts. So if you can always keep busy, you know, for me, it's keeping in the gym. And, you know, because I don't have a 9-to-5, it's very easy for me to just overthink things. You know, it's hard to overthink if you're constantly busy. So, you know, I try and just maintain busy, you know, surround yourself with good people, of course, because there's a lot of people that can, you know, cause your anxiety and they can cause you to be in that kind of depressed state. You know, I'm fortunate enough that I haven't got that. You know, I've got good people around me and, you know, yeah, just talk to someone, man. That's I'd say the best advice that I can give you.
Absolutely. And as we find ourselves coming out of the pandemic now, and there's, you know, there's a roadmap out of this, and hopefully we'll start to see a lot more, you know, opportunities to connect with our friends and families, you know, in a more direct manner. What's happening right now and what's coming up?
So unfortunately, for me, I'm injured. My hand's still busted from the last fight. So, you know, I started training again, but then...
Throwing it, some proper elbows, mate.
Yeah,
some
bad boy elbows. That's all I can do. So, saying that, Blake, my coach, Chris Knowles-Lee, he said to say hello. He's like, he's a big fan. So he said he's going to watch the podcast. And yeah, so
brilliant.
I was with him this morning. And I said, I'm doing an interview with you know, Neil from the Invertinas. And he said he's a massive fan. So yeah, he wanted to say hello.
Brilliant.
But yeah, you know, because of this injury, if I'm honest, it's not, you know, causing me any grief now. But what the doctor said was, because I was constantly putting impact on it, it's not getting better and I'm making it worse. So he said, look, you've got to have, he said, 8 to 12 weeks rest. I've had 4 and I feel like I'm ready to go back. So what I'm going to do is I think I'm going to have another 4 weeks. I don't think I need 12, if I'm honest. You know, I think the doctor is just being a little bit OTT on that one. But we'll see, because, you know, it's kind of 2 steps forward and then 2 steps back. And, you know, it's very frustrating. So as soon as I get that hand back to where it should be, you know, then I'm going to ask the UFC, let's get me back in there. You know, I think end of June, July is probably a realistic time, you know, when I can get back in there healthily, because, you know, coming off a loss, I don't really want to be taking short notice fights. So yeah, you know, for now it's just train them elbows, you know, get good at them, get good at kicks, and just work on all the areas that I possibly can, you know, without obviously damaging the hand too much. So yeah, bit of a crap one on that, unfortunately, but you know, it's the sport I'm in. So, you know, I'm just luckily enough, I can still do stuff, you know, as if it was a knee injury,
luckily
I couldn't.
You still got 5 fingers as well. You ain't lost one.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, touch wood. I don't want to go into my next fight and lose a finger or a toe.
And the bantamweight to me is, I think, the best division in the UFC. I think there's so many amazing fighters in that division, both from, you know, champ to 15, and then outside of that up to probably like 30, 35, 40. Do you, is that annoying that the division's so good? Because it feels like there's not an easy fight in that division.
If I'm honest, no. I look at it as a good thing, because if I become the champ in that division, I feel like, right, I'm pound for pound best fighter in the world, because that's the best division.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, I wouldn't say easy, sorry, but, you know, heavyweight, you know, it's quite an easy division to maybe become the champ. You know, heavyweights, you know, it's an easier sport for them. You know, it's a lot more kind of simple as such. But, you know, for us bantamweights, it's such a high pace, fast paced fight, and the competition is so vast. You know, them top 15 are, even guys that are unranked, you know, are absolute monsters. So, you know, for me, it's even more motivation, and, you know, to be a part of that, it's a cool feeling, you know, and I'm proud almost to say that, you know, I'm in the toughest division there is, because I know some fighters that ranked in the flyweight division. I'm not going to mention names, and I'm sitting there thinking, oh, how is he ranked? You know,
yeah.
But it is what it is. You know, you play the cards that are dealt. So, yeah.
Well, I guess we can start to wrap it up now, Nathaniel, and just. On that note, if people want to kind of keep up to speed with you that aren't following you on any socials, where's the best sort of social media platform for people to keep up to speed, to see you? Go and watch them videos. You throwing some badass elbows as well, man.
So Instagram and Twitter is both the Prospect MMA, and that's all I really use. You know, I have got Facebook, but I don't really use it. It's a bit old school now for me. That's just to, you know, go and say hello to my nan and granddad who are on there. But yeah, just drop me a follow on Instagram and Twitter, and hopefully, you know, people like what they see.
Wonderful. Nathaniel, Brilliant. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for your time, man, and best of luck for the rest of your career, man.
Mate, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me. You know, I appreciate your time, of course.
Our pleasure, mate. Thanks very much for coming on.
Appreciate it, boys.
Cheers,
Thank
man.
You. See you soon. Bye, mate. Bye-bye.
Wow, that was great. What a lovely chap. What a nice guy as well. Nathaniel Wood. That was yeah, I just thought that was a brilliant chat. It was great to hear him talk about his relationship with his dad, how he got into the sport, with Brad Pickett as well.
I loved hearing that bit that he knew, even though he'd lost the fight, it was going to be potential fight of the night. And just to get that insight, yeah, to know that they were all sitting there watching the other fights with it, just thinking, don't be too good.
Like, yeah, I hope this is boring.
Yeah, I just thought that was incredible. You forget that, like, you just presume, I don't know, they're with medics, or I don't really know what the kind of post-fight, immediate thing is. I'm sure obviously they get checked out, but then what happens? They're sitting there watching the rest of the card to see if it affects their wages, which is a really cool insight. And then to know that, fast forward that, they're sitting there dribbling kebabs with Brad Pickett and his dad, and smashing milkshakes at 3 a.m. Amazing.
Yeah, and it's great to hear that he's already still in the gym. I know he can't train the way he wants to train with his injury at the moment, but as you said, he's throwing some elbows, he's throwing some kicks, he's sharpening up other tools, and hopefully there's a silver lining to that and other aspects of the game improve, and then you can add to that. So it would be great to see him back. Fingers crossed he's back soon. I love the idea of him fighting Thomas Almeida and avenging that loss that Brad had to Thomas Almeida. I think, Thomas just had a loss to Sean O'Malley. Nathaniel Woods just had a loss to Casey Kenny, although it's like a disputed loss. And Nathaniel's even saying that, as far as he's concerned, he didn't lose that fight. So I think him versus Thomas Almeida could be a great fight. And then he's mentioned Chito Vera as well. So there's some really good storylines of fights out there for him. And if he strings together 2-3 wins against decent opposition, he'll find himself ranked inside that top 10. And then, then you've got some real big fights. Because as I've said, and I think that bantamweight division is stacked full of just amazing fighters and absolute legends. You've got Aldo, Cruz, Frankie Edgar, and well, it's a shame I didn't ask him this question, but God, what must it mean to him to fight against legends like that? That'll really give him that motivation that he spoke of. It's not just turning up to fight, it's that added motivation if you're fighting a legend, I'm sure.
Yeah. And to touch on that kind of thing, if it's the first time listening to the MMA Fan podcast, you have missed some great episodes with Brad Pickett to start with, which was amazing. It was lovely to hear about their relationship from Brad as well. And also, just touching on you asking about what it was like to fight a legend, we recently also had on Arnold Allen, and we asked Arnold all about sort of training at TriStar and what that was like, and he tells a really wonderful story about the first time he gets thrown in the cage with GSP, and just that kind of, oh my God, this is George St. Pierre, what the hell do I do here? I can't hit him. And I won't say too much, but I will definitely suggest going back and listening to that episode. And we've also recently had Molly McCann on, and she spoke so openly about her approach to sort of mental well-being, and as well as that kind of turning on your fight face, and we can straight away, she was one of the most kindest, friendliest people that we'd ever spoke to, and she says, that all has to stop when that cage door shuts. And it's been a real privilege over the last sort of 4 or 5 weeks to be able to speak to so many fighters that both me and you have watched on the telly, and now we're getting to ask them all the questions that we've always wanted to ask.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a dream of mine. I've absolutely loved it. I've been listening to MMA podcasts for a while. I've been watching the fights for even longer. And to be able to be chatting with these people has been fantastic. I've absolutely loved it. It's been great. This sounds like it's some kind of like eulogy for the show. Like, this isn't like the last ever episode or something. It's like we're just eulogising the show. No, this is just normal. Stu's just getting, it's emotional. He's an emotional guy. But what have we got coming up? We've got...
This is like the contender, this podcast. So what happens after the 6 episodes, me and Blake are then going to have a tear-up at the O2. So we're going
to... I don't think you'd be able to make my weight, Stu.
I'd have no chance, mate.
You'd be in that sauna for a year trying to make my skinny ass weight.
I'd have to be in that sauna for 6 months just to fight Francis. Jesus. So also we should say we've got some amazing guests coming up as well. We've got some more Fight or Flight guests coming at your way soon, right?
Yes, well, we've got Lee Mack coming up, which I'm really excited about. I played Soccer Aid with Lee. And,
did you do Soccer Aid?
Oh, did I not mention that I did Soccer Aid and won the won England's last major footballing trophy for them?
Because there was a sudden death penalty shootout, wasn't there? Did you take one?
There was. Yeah, yeah, I did. I took the last one, mate. Went straight in the bottom corner. No big deal. Just absolutely celebrated like a G as well. Just like Zlatan, or Cantona, just threw my arms up. You know, no big deal. I just do that every week. Score in front of 80,000 people at Old Trafford. But yeah, so we've got Lee Mack coming up. We're also going to interview John Gooden. John Gooden has started John Gooden, if you don't know, is a UFC commentator, and he has started up a foundation trying to help out MMA gyms that have really struggled during the pandemic. We all know that gyms have been shut. People haven't really been allowed to go to the gyms unless you're with elite level athletes and stuff like that. So there's a lot of gyms out there that have been suffering, and John Gooden has brilliantly tried to put together a foundation to try and donate money to one, if not more, gyms that truly deserve it. So if you've got an MMA gym out there, you can get in touch with John, go on the site. We might try and put this stuff up on the socials where you can kind of nominate your gym for sponsorship to receive this money from John Gooden's foundation. So we're going to talk to him about the foundation, but also about being a commentator at the UFC, being, you know, front row for some of the best fights, going to places like Fight Island and America, or Vegas, all over the world for these kind of fight events. And so we're going to be talking about that and what he thinks of upcoming cards and stuff as well.
Wonderful. Scroobius Pip will be popping in again. Pip's coming back with MMA commentator Brian Lacey, and we will be collectively discussing, what event will that be?
261, I think. So Usman Masvidal, Masvidal 2, but also I'm probably more excited about Rose versus Zhang Weili and Andrade versus Valentina Shevchenko. So there's going to be some great fights on that card. We're going to be discussing that. And also, don't forget, this week on Saturday, the UFC is prime time UK time. It's unfortunately Till's dropped out with his broken collarbone. We wish him all the best, but Big Mouth, cool Big Mouth, he's stepped up. Kevin Holland, only 3 weeks or whatever it is after losing to Derek Brunson, he's stepping in there against Marvin Vettori.
I'm all over Martin.
Marvin Vettori, come on. Stay professional, Blake. He's there. He's there. And then we've got Arnold Allen, he's the co-main event of one of our previous guests, against Sadiq Yusuf. So we'll be looking at him. And it's prime time, UK time. And not only that, but on Friday night, the night before, this Friday coming, if this goes out by then, hopefully it will, we've got Bader Machida 2 at Bellator. But that's not the important thing. The important thing is it's the start of the light heavyweight Grand Prix at Bellator. And I think, as someone that's not watched a huge amount of Bellator, I am super excited for this. And I think it's going to be exactly what I needed to get balls deep in Bellator, basically.
Definitely, so, man. There's a rumble coming, and I can't wait.
Is that, I don't know, is that the week after, or is that Saturday? I think there might even be a Saturday night card or something. I'm not 100% sure, but I know this Friday is Bader versus Machida 2. And I'm very, very excited about it. Is Rumble even on that card? I need to find out. But yeah, the start of the light heavyweight Grand Prix. That's all you need to know. Check it out. You want to stay focused on that and how that pays out.
Absolutely. If you don't follow us on the socials, we are on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. Give us a follow. Like, love, share, retweet. Tell your pals if they like MMA or they just like hearing a couple of knobheads just sitting there talking about their favourite fights and their favourite fighters. That's what we do on this podcast. And occasionally we get blessed to talk to some incredible people. We're back next time, right?
Right, we're back next time. I'll make sure I get that spirits glass sent over to you, mate.
You do that.
First ever gift. I'm so chuffed. I'm so
definitely
happy.
And I'm going to, if all goes well on this Saturday, I'm going to raise a glass to Martin Vettori.
Good old Martin. Oh, we love him. Catch you later.
See you later.